Welcome to the Ask the Expert show, where the experts offer you educational information from local experts in the field of legal health, financial, and home improvement. Join us every week at this time for great educational information from lawyers, doctors, contractors, and specialists in their field. Sit back and enjoy the next hour of Ask the Experts.
Good morning, and welcome to the Ask the Expert show. Today's guest is Lee A. Schwartz of the Schwartz Jordan Law Firm. So welcome, Mr. Schwartz.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate being here.
Tell us about your practice.
Our practice is a family law practice located our main office in Philadelphia. We practice in the five-county Philadelphia area. Our practice concentrates in divorce, custody practice, child and spousal support, division of property, protection from abuse, prenuptial and postnuptial agreements, and adoption.
How long have you been in practice?
I've been in practice for 35 years. My partner has been in practice about 15 years. Our firm has been operating for going on 2 years right now. And we just concentrate in family law.
Well, you know that you mentioned that you do have a partner. And who is the partner?
My partner's name is Lisa Jordan. Lisa has been involved in family law her entire career. She began her career in the court system as a support officer, stayed there for a number of years, and then went to work for a very prominent small family law boutique in Philadelphia, a boutique law firm. Stayed there for a number of years, and then, as I said, she and I joined together going on 2 years ago.
Let's talk about divorce for a moment. Is there a divorce process in Pennsylvania that could be of interest to our listeners?
Sure. The divorce process in Pennsylvania is an ever-modifying, ever-growing area of law. We are a no-fault state in Pennsylvania. And what that means is that the reason a party to a divorce or a party to a marriage wants to get divorced in most cases really doesn't matter because we're no fault. The initial issue generally is, will both parties consent to the divorce or will one party not consent? Because if a party does not consent, the track that the case takes is a completely different track than if there is consent.
How long does it take normally to get divorced?
Well, that's an excellent question. And I think, again, a lot of that depends on whether it's a consensual divorce, meaning both parties agree to be divorced, or whether it's a non-consensual divorce. If it's a consensual divorce, it can be as short as 6 months, and it might be a year or so. If it's a non-consensual divorce, you're looking at a minimum of 2 years right now under the law as it exists today, and it can be longer than that. The biggest hurdle in getting divorced in non-consensual cases is division of assets. And depending on the complexity of the assets, that will determine many times how long it takes to get the divorce, because in the vast majority of cases, the court will not divorce the parties if the assets have not been divided between husband and wife.
So you mentioned the two different kinds.
Yes.
There probably are a lot of folks who really don't know how you identify or advise somebody which way to go. So can you break down the difference between the two that you just mentioned?
Sure. No question, if both parties will consent to divorcing one another, that certainly is the way to go.
And that's called consensual.
That's a consensual divorce where both parties agree that they wish to be divorced.
What's the advantage of doing it that way?
Speed. Speed and lower or lesser legal fees. That's really the advantage.
But an attorney is still necessary, I assume.
Well, I don't know that I want to use the word necessary because it's not required.
Helpful?
Very. I think we've made the process. We've succeeded, unfortunately, in making the process so complicated to get divorced. That certainly people can, and they do it themselves. But if you have a life, if you work, if you're busy during the day, if you don't have the time to devote to processing your own divorce, it's a monumental task as a layman.
I would also guess that what the value of the estate is comes into it in this given conversational part.
Sure, because if there are assets to be divided, for example, if there's a house that the parties lived in, a marital home that they own, that house has to be valued. You may need to have a professional appraiser appraise the home. There may be liens, there may be judgments, there may be other liabilities against the home that need to be investigated. If somebody owns a business, for example, if husband or wife are business owners, many times that business has to be valued by a professional evaluator. And that's a very complicated process. I'm not sure how a non-lawyer would find out who to use for that process and know how to engage the person for that process, know how to direct the person, the expert through that process. Certainly if there's no assets and there's consent, even that can be daunting, just processing the paperwork.
And the other kind, the one where the parties cannot get together and really do require outside help. Tell us something about that, perhaps some typical situations.
Well, sure. I think a typical situation...
where people don't really like each other.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the typical situation, I think, is where one of the two spouses comes in to see us. They're ready to move forward and get divorced. We file a divorce complaint with the court. The complaint is the document that you file with the court in order to begin the legal process. So we would prepare that. We would file that with the court. We would then have it presented to the other party. We call that service. We would have that presented to the other spouse. And that spouse can say, no, I do not agree to be divorced. And that would mean that our client would have to wait 2 years from the date of separation in order to begin the process of getting divorced through the court. So it just makes it a longer process, and it makes it a much more expensive process from the attorney's billing point of view.
Well, somewhere along the line, and probably in every single situation, comes money. So let's talk about alimony. Is there alimony in Pennsylvania?
Glad you asked that question, because I think that's one of the common misconceptions, that there is not alimony in Pennsylvania, and there certainly is alimony in Pennsylvania. It doesn't become a part of every divorce case. There are certain factors under the divorce code, the divorce law in Pennsylvania, which would make an alimony order part of a case. But alimony does exist not only after marriage, but there's a form of alimony that exists between the date the divorce complaint is filed and the date of divorce. So, yes, it certainly does exist.
Tell me again, how many years have you been doing this?
This is my 35th year, and I'm for me personally, I'm one of the lucky ones in that I like what I do, and I enjoy going to work every day, and I learn something new every day. It's really a very enjoyable practice for me in the sense that I enjoy helping people through what I think is one of the most difficult times of their life.
If someone would like to reach you, maybe this week, next week, or whatever, what's the best way to reach you?
Well, certainly by telephone. The firm number is 215-967-9070. Again, that's 215-967-9070. And also we have a website which you can go to, and you can contact us through that. And that's www.schwartzjordan.com. Again, www.schwartzjordan. That's one word, .com.
I'm going to now change the subject.
Mm-hmm.
Many people getting divorced have children.
Sure.
So let's talk about custody. What type custody is there in Pennsylvania?
Well, we have, first of all, there's two types of custody that people need to know about. There's legal custody and there's physical custody. Legal custody has to do with whether both parents will make important decisions for their children. That's not guaranteed in every case, although in the vast majority of cases, they do share that decision making. And then there's physical custody. And in many cases, although not all cases, parents in some fashion will share custody of their child or children in some fashion. What I mean by that is it can be a situation where one parent is a primary custodian, meaning their child or children live with them most of the time during the month, and the other parent is a partial custodian, meaning that they are with them less than 50% of the time. Or it can be a shared custody arrangement, which is equal. And there are many different varieties of equal custody in Pennsylvania.
You know, I watch Judge Judy, and I read the newspapers, and perhaps like a lot of people, I have the feeling that the courts favor the mother more than the father. Can you talk about that for a moment?
Sure. And having been in practice 35 years, I can speak about it historically also. And I think that when I first started practicing, in fact, under the law at that time, there was a doctrine called the nurturing parent doctrine, and there was a pretty strong presumption at that time, especially with younger children, that all things being equal, if the mom was a good person and a good mother, the child or children should be with the mother. That was 30 years ago. I think today that presumption is gone. I don't think there's any presumption at all, except I think if you've got an infant, a very young child, I think many times the court will say that infant child, again, all things being equal, because every fact pattern, every case is unique, that young child will spend more time with the mother as an infant, but certainly as that child becomes a toddler, I think it's fair to say that all of that goes away. And we see plenty of dads getting primary custody now, with even with younger children, in the right cases and in the right fact situation. So it's important that if you are separating or considering separation, and we do a lot of pre-separation consultation in our office. People will call us when they're just saying to themselves, you know, maybe I ought to go see somebody and just talk about it. I'm not ready to separate.
Do you charge for that?
It depends. If someone wants to come in for a short meeting, 20, 30 minutes, many times we won't. If somebody says, listen, I want to bring in my assets, I want to bring in my bank accounts, I want to do a complete consultation, that's a different story. If we're going to take an hour and a half, 2 hours with somebody, yeah, we're going to charge. But for a short kind of, give me the summary of your situation and we'll
by
talk.
By telephone, probably.
And many times by phone, sure. So that's pretty much how we look at it.
Now, let's say there's a custody order in existence. Is there a time limit? Do you have to come in every 6 months or 3 months? Is it ever permanent?
Custody orders are never permanent in Pennsylvania. They're always modifiable. They're always subject to the best interests of the child, the change in circumstances of the parents. And I would say that it's a very odd case that a custody order is entered when a child is an infant and is never modified for the next 16, 17 years. That would be a very unusual situation.
I've heard of a term called partial custody.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work, say, in Philadelphia, right here?
Mm-hmm. And I think if you lined up 20 cases, 50 cases, the majority of cases are cases today where one party is a primary custodian, the other party is a partial custodian. And in a partial custody situation, that means that, again, the child or children are with that parent less than 50% of the time. Generally, it's overnight, and I say generally. And in many cases, a partial custodian might have an every other weekend custody schedule with their child, where they're with their child from sometime on Friday afternoon or early evening through Sunday night or Monday morning. They might have an overnight every Wednesday or Thursday. They might have two dinner visits during the week if they don't have an overnight. There is no form. There's no set pattern to custody. It depends on the schedules of the parents, depends on the needs of the children. It depends on the quality of parenting. It depends how far away the parents live from each other. That's a very important factor in custody, and the ease of having multiple regular custodial visits. So it's, again, you can't walk away from a discussion on custody and say, this is the way it is. It's just so individualized depending on the case and the parties.
Well, I imagine that people going through this for the first time and they meet with you, one of their questions, I'm talking about first time they meet with you, probably one of their questions is, well, how long does it take for us to get in front of a judge? How long does it take for this to be settled, where we come to an agreement? And then maybe a second part of the question is, what happens if they can't come to an agreement?
They're both good questions. I think you have to look at it by what county you're in to, in order to answer that question. If you're in Montgomery County, you're going to be in front of a judge within a, with certainly a judge within a year of filing a custody document, whether it's a complaint or a modification of an order. But we also need to understand that in all the counties in this area, it's a two-step process. So when a custody complaint or a modification petition is filed, and a modification petition is a document that's filed in order to change an existing order, you first go in front of a master, not a judge, a custody master or a conciliator, they're called in Montgomery County. And that case is heard there with the hope of resolving it at that level without having to get in front of a judge. And in the counties, meaning not Philadelphia, that's normally within a couple of months, 3 months of the filing of a custody complaint. And then if it can't be resolved there, if the parent, if the parties don't agree, then you'd be in front of a judge several months later. Different in Philadelphia County, only because of the volume in Philadelphia County, the volume and the number of cases. If you were to file a custody document, whether it's a petition or a complaint, today, you would be in front of a master in 4 or 5 months rather than a couple of months as it is in the counties. And then you might not get in front of a judge for more than a year from the date of the original filing. So it's just a whole different process. And it might not be resolved at that first listing in front of a judge. You may have to come back again. So for clients, it's especially frustrating. It's a long process. But it's not one that's going to change in the immediate future just because of volume.
Well, when you talk custody, you're talking children. So a thought, does what the child want, what the child desires, how does a judge sort of decide the answer to that?
Mm-hmm. Under the custody statute in Pennsylvania, there are a number of factors that a judge must consider in arriving at a custody order. One of those factors is preference of the child. Certainly, a three-year-old, four-year-old's preference is irrelevant. Judge is not even going to ask that question of a child of that tender age. But when you start getting to double digits, when you start getting to 9, 10, 11 years of age, the preference is important.
All right, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, since we're talking about children, let's talk about child support.
Okay.
The Schwartz Jordan Law Group's philosophy in family law is simple: to provide you with the legal advice and support you need in order to make sound, educated decisions that prepare you for your future. They can help you with all types of family law issues, including the complete divorce process. Much of their practice involves contested or uncontested divorce matters, such as alimony and division of property, including retirement assets, stock options, and business interests. Schwartz Jordan have a great deal of experience assisting clients in family law issues involving children, paternity actions, child custody, and child support. They also represent clients outside of the divorce process, drafting prenuptial agreements and postnuptial agreements, and assisting with the modification of domestic orders and child support enforcement. For more information or to discuss your divorce or family law case, call Schwartz Jordan Law today at 215-967-9070. That's 215-967-9070, or go to their website, schwartzjordan.com.
Yeah, I know. I'm lucky.
Welcome back to the Ask the Expert show. Today's guest is Lee Schwartz of the Schwartz Jordan Law Office here in Philadelphia. When we last spoke, Mr. Schwartz, we were talking about child support. How is that calculated?
Yeah, and it's good for people to know, because child support can be a very frustrating process for both the payor and the payee, for both the mother and the father or the parents. Child support is an income-based calculation in Pennsylvania, and what that means, and you must remember this, is that your expenses, whether how much your rent is, how much your mortgage is, your electric bill, your food bill, all those expenses of life in general don't matter. It's an income-based calculation. And the way that it's calculated is the income of the parents is actually added together, and that becomes the income that's available to support the child. And then we have a formula called the guidelines. And the income is inserted into this formula, and depending on the number of children, a total support figure is calculated. And the paying spouse pays a percentage of that total support figure depending on the relative percentage of incomes of mom and dad or of the parents. And what that means is if the payor makes 60% of the income between the two parties, the payor, meaning the paying party, will pay 60% of that support figure.
Well, you mentioned a few issues. What are some of the more common issues that you see over and over and over again at Schwartz Jordan Law Firm?
Again, some of the more common issues are the issue of earning capacity. And what that means is that Pennsylvania is not an earning state. We don't just look at the earnings of a party. We look at what they have the ability to earn. So, for example, let's say that you are in the radio business and you've been a DJ for your entire career. And last year you had your job and you were earning $50,000 a year. And your spouse filed for child support and you decided that you wanted to reduce your income, to reduce your support, so you quit your job. And you took a job working at a fast food place making $10 an hour. You will be held in that fact situation to the income you made when you were a DJ, because we are an earning capacity state. And you've proven that you had the capacity to earn $50,000 a year.
And that's why it's important to have a good lawyer.
That's why it's important to have a good lawyer, because earning capacity can be an important issue in a support case, and it's a complex issue to prove sometimes. So that's a situation. One of the other serious situations is when a party owns a business, especially when a party owns a business that's a corporation. And there may be perks of personal expenses paid by the business. That's income, even though the business pays these perks because they're personal expenses. There may be issues of retained earnings. There may be just a host of issues that come out of you or a party owning their own business. And I venture to say that without competent legal advice and counseling, a party's going to have a difficult time proving those almost invisible benefits that are also income. So there are a host of issues in a support case that would require, I think, at least a consultation with a lawyer. Just to be sure that if you're going to try and tackle this yourself, which I think is dangerous, but that's my own opinion, if you're going to try and do that, you want to be sure you know what the issues are.
Now, you mentioned a few examples of basic child support. What are, in real life, what are the most common, the ones that you see in every case?
Well, again, we've talked about how we calculate what we call basic support. But there are other expenses that are in many situations that are divided between the parties in addition to basic support. So, for example, let's say there's child care so that a party can work. That child care is shared. That child care expense is shared by the parties in proportion to their income. Let's say the kids go to summer camp. Let's say the kids have braces. Let's say the kids have extracurricular activities, or they have a host of other similar expenses. some of these expenses, while I said the mortgage and the food and the common expenses of life are not considered, these specialty expenses are, and they're paid in addition to the basic support. So that's important to know, and that's important to investigate. If a party has more than one job, the income from the second job is also considered. If people get bonuses at work, bonuses are income, even if they're not guaranteed. So we may have a year where a party comes in, and for the last 2 years, they didn't get a bonus at work. And the year that we're in court, they got a $20,000 bonus. For that year, that $20,000 can be considered income. The following year, if there's no bonus, the parties would have to come back to court, meet with a court officer, and have that support amount adjusted.
If there's a calamity to the person that is paying the support, maybe they go to jail. Mm-hmm. Maybe they get fired. Mm-hmm. Maybe they have a heart attack. Mm-hmm. There's a calamity, and all of a sudden there is no income. Then what happens? Does the state help out? What happens?
What the party has to do, and most people don't know this, and they just let their support order run. So if you lose your job, if you have a heart attack, if a calamity happens to you, it's incumbent upon the party going through the calamity to file a petition to modify or a petition to suspend their support obligation during the time of the calamity. Because if they don't, what's going to happen is the court's not going to know that their income situation changed. And once they're not paying their support because they're not employed, eventually a contempt petition is going to be filed against them by the court because the court's not receiving this support and they don't know why. And this party is going to end up in front of a judge having to explain themselves. So it's very important if there is some reason why a party can't pay their support obligation, they let the court know about it.
I've heard that if somebody doesn't pay support, that the court will send them to jail.
Can happen. Now, I would say to you that in most cases, and I'm not a judge, and I have learned in my practice there are no guarantees in my business, and that forecasting what a judge will or won't do is a very difficult, if not impossible, situation. But I will say to you that if the first time you're in front of a judge for non-payment of support, in most cases, if you're respectful, if you explain your situation, if you bring a little money with you that day to pay part of your obligation, you won't go to jail in most cases. Many times it's the repeated offender, the person who's the habitual non-payor, that ends up in jail. And the first time generally is a 30-day sentence, but you always have the opportunity to purge yourself. So the judge will say, you owe, hypothetically, $5,000 in support. I'm going to put you in jail for 30 days, but you can get yourself out with a payment of $2,500, let's say, a portion of that $5,000. And that will shake money out of people many times right away because they don't want to go to jail. And they'll call their family member or their friend or somebody and borrow the money, and that will shake them out. If it doesn't, then they'll spend 30 days in jail. And when they get out, they're back in the same situation again. They still owe the money. And if they don't pay it, then they go for many times 60 days. And it just becomes a repetitive problem.
Well, if the person who is to receive the funds doesn't get the funds, how do they handle their bills and everything else?
Very difficult situation. There's nobody to step in for them. So if the payor, the person who's supposed to pay, isn't paying their support, it can have a horrible effect on the person who's supposed to receive it. And other than court and contempt and the threat of incarceration, there really is no other remedy. There's nobody to step in to pay that bill for the payor.
You use the words horrible effect, which brings up abuse. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have that situation, unfortunately. What is the legal term? I mean, I don't mean legal term. What is abuse, so to speak? What does it cover?
Well, Pennsylvania has a protection from abuse law. And and in a general sense, the protection from abuse law is designed to protect parties in a loving relationship of some sort, whether it's familial, dating, marriage, in a loving relationship from the abuse of one party to another. And in most cases, that abuse is one party inflicting serious bodily injury. Very important words under the law, under the abuse law, serious bodily injury on the other party, or the threat of imminent, meaning right now, serious bodily injury, a threat. So if I say to you, Joe, I'm coming over to your house right now and I'm going to kill you, that is the threat of imminent, serious bodily injury. That is protected. If we were in a loving relationship, that would be protected under the protection of abuse statute. And what you would need to do, a party would need to do, is to file with the court a protection from abuse petition. And based on that very unusual situation, the court can enter an order, a temporary protection from abuse order, without the input from the other party. Very unusual under the law. Only one party in court. The court can enter a temporary order telling the parties not to abuse each other or evicting a party from the residence of the party who claims they're abused. Now, this is a temporary order, and it only stays in effect for a short period of time until you have a hearing when both parties can speak. But the protection from abuse statute is a very strong law in Pennsylvania.
Well, I would imagine that if such an order is given, that it has an impact on a person's custody rights.
Well, the protection from abuse statute does provide a custody provision, which many judges, for the entry of a temporary custody order, many judges that do protection from abuse orders, especially in Philadelphia, don't get involved in custody. However, a finding of abuse, meaning that after a hearing, the court finding that a party has abused the other party or abused a child, can have a very serious impact on custody rights. Because under the custody statute in Pennsylvania, one of the factors that the court has to consider is whether there's been abuse committed by a party against the other party or the children. And if there is, that can have a serious impact on a person's ability to have custody with their child.
Who determines and how is it determined what abuse actually is? Is it spanking a child? Is it yelling at a child? Is it alleged sexual advances to a child? How is that determined if the person being accused, it's just not right? How does that person being accused protect themselves?
Well, again, you're going to have a hearing in front of a judge. We have two judges in Philadelphia County who are very experienced and do only protection from abuse. So they hear cases day in and day out, and they're going to make what we call credibility determination, meaning they're going to decide who's telling the truth. Many times, and as you point out, Joe, there's only two people in the room when this alleged abuse occurs, there really is no independent way to prove things. Now, certainly if there's bruises, if there are broken bones, if there are other witnesses, certainly those are important factors in the case to prove abuse. I think yelling at a child, as long as you're not threatening to harm the child in most cases, is probably not abuse. But again, we'd have to see what the substance of the yelling is. Spanking, normal spanking on the tush with the child's pants on by an open hand, probably is not abuse. It's not serious bodily injury. Again, that's the standard in Pennsylvania. It's not just bodily injury, serious bodily injury. So it's really very fact sensitive. Certainly in the case where you've got hospital visits and black eyes and we see those too, and broken bones and, you know, belt marks on a body, terrible things. Abuse is easy to prove. But in many cases, it's not.
Suppose the abuse is non-physical, like you say, where the child is deprived of going to school for one reason or another, or maybe as an older child and sent out to work. How's that handled?
Yeah, that wouldn't be abuse in Pennsylvania. That would be a custody issue. And we do see, it is not uncommon to see cases where there are school-related issues in custody cases. And there are cases where, especially parents who are doing homeschooling, and I have nothing against homeschooling. It can be a very successful method of teaching your child, but it has to be done appropriately. It has to be done regularly and daily. But there can be school-related issues that are very important. You can have a situation where you have one parent living in the city and may not have a public school to send their child to, and another party is living in the suburbs. And that the party living in, for example, in Lower Merion or in Haddonfield or in Council Rock in Bucks County or in Cheltenham, there are some very exceptional school districts in the Philadelphia area, and it's very common in custody cases to have school decision conflicts between parents to be heard by the court.
You know, one subject that we haven't discussed is prenuptial agreements, which are very common today, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So what is a prenuptial agreement?
Prenuptial agreements are agreements that are between spouses who are going to be getting married when there are financial issues that need to be discussed before marriage. We generally don't see premarital agreements with younger people getting married unless there's a family business or there's some other financial issue that most young kids don't have. But certainly in second marriages or marriages later in life, there can be savings that are brought into the marriage. There can be homes or businesses that are brought into the marriage. There can be retirement funds brought into the marriage. There can be debt that's brought into the marriage. And a prenuptial agreement will discuss how these issues, these items, are shared or not shared between people who are getting married. Prenuptial agreements can be critical documents that parties should have if they're getting married later in life.
And when a couple comes in on a prenuptial agreement and they don't agree, is that the end of the coming marriage?
No, I think it's not. And I think two skilled lawyers, one for husband and one for wife, or one for each of the parties, certainly can help with that. Also in our office, we do mediation. Both Lisa and I are trained mediators. We were in this field, in the mediation field. I was in it in the beginning of divorce mediation when it was looked down upon by judges, by other lawyers, something that lawyers shouldn't do.
We're going to take another break, but this is a fascinating subject, prenuptial. So many people do it at certain economic levels, like you say. So let's talk about this some more right after this break.
The Schwartz Jordan Law Group's philosophy in family law is simple: to provide you with the legal advice and support you need in order to make sound, educated decisions that prepare you for your future. They can help you with all types of family law issues, including the complete divorce process. Much of their practice involves contested or uncontested divorce matters, such as alimony and division of property, including retirement assets, stock options, and business interests. Schwartz Jordan have a great deal of experience assisting clients in family law issues involving children, paternity actions, child custody, and child support. They also represent clients outside of the divorce process, drafting prenuptial agreements and postnuptial agreements, and assisting with the modification of domestic orders and child support enforcement. For more information or to discuss your divorce or family law case, call Schwartz Jordan Law today at 215-967-9070. That's 215-967-9070, or go to their website, schwartzjordan.com.
Welcome back to the Ask the Expert Show. Today's guest is Lee Schwartz of the Schwartz Jordan Law Group here in Philadelphia. We've been getting fascinating information on divorce and custody and just about everything that comes up in these, unfortunately, very common situations. And obviously, it's very important to have an attorney. Right now, to get back to how we stopped before, let's talk about mediation.
Mediation in a divorce practice or in a family law practice is an area that many family lawyers are not trained in. I think there's lawyers who do it that aren't trained, but there are only a small number of family practitioners in the Philadelphia area who are trained in mediation, and Lisa and I in our law practice are trained in mediation. And there are a lot of advantages to mediation over a traditional litigated divorce. In a traditional litigated divorce, generally you're going to take a lot more time to resolve the issues. It's going to be a lot more expensive from an attorney fee perspective, and it's going to create certain hard feelings and certain animosity between the parties that isn't present in a mediated divorce. In a mediated divorce, the parties will come into our office. We don't represent anybody in the process. We are independent of the parties, and our job is to assist the parties in coming to their agreement regarding everything, regarding how to divide their assets, regarding the custody of their children, regarding child support, spousal support, alimony. We will assist the parties in resolving whatever issues they have coming out of their separation and their ultimate divorce. A mediated process can take one session, can take five sessions, can take 10 sessions. It doesn't depend on us as mediators. It depends on the parties. And there are parties who come in to see us for a mediation. Both parties have full knowledge of the assets and the liabilities, the values. They've spoken to each other. They've come to an agreement. They know how they want to divide the assets. And they just got several questions on support or custody, and then we draft an agreement and we're done. Other people come in. The other end of that spectrum is still not uncommon. And it's where one party has really all the knowledge of the finances of the spouses, and the other party knows nothing. And the mediation in the beginning becomes an education process where the party that has the knowledge and has the information is sharing that with the other party and with me or with Lisa. And we have to get to the point of comfortability where both parties are comfortable with the information. Sometimes each party will hire their own lawyer to consult with outside of the mediation process. Not uncommon. Generally, those lawyers do not come with their clients to the mediation in our office. That's generally a three-person process. And once everyone's comfortable with the information and they know what the value of everything is, then we can begin discussing how these assets are going to be divided and what the best arrangement is for both parties, rather than a litigated process where each party is looking for what's best for each of them. So I think it's safe to say that everybody is not a candidate for mediation. Certainly a party who is just looking to get the best deal for themselves that they can, rather than trying to fashion an arrangement that works for both sides. The party who is not looking to do that may not be a candidate for mediation. And part of what I do and what Lisa does when people call our office and mention the word mediation is we qualify them on the phone first just to see whether they believe that not only they, but their spouse is a candidate for mediation and really has their eye on the ball. And that's the phrase that I use with people who call. Does your spouse have their eye on the ball? Are they looking to hurt you financially? Are they looking to get their pound of flesh? Because if they are, mediation probably is not the best process for them.
Well, we have been talking to a great extent about divorce. What general advice would you give to someone who is thinking about divorce before they start the process? And somebody is thinking about it. Do you give them some direction on you should do it, you shouldn't do it, here's the reason why?
I don't think it's our place as divorce practitioners to tell somebody whether they should or should not get divorced or should or should not start the process. Certainly we can talk about specific assets and how people should protect themselves. And it's difficult to say today in talking to you what that advice is because it's so fact-specific and fact-sensitive that it really does take either a consultation over the phone or an in-person consultation with somebody who's considering divorce. And divorce planning, as I said earlier, is a big part of our practice. And it's a wise thing to do because if you're seeing that your marriage is going in a certain direction, or if you're not married and you have a child with a party and you see that relationship souring, and there may be custody issues or there may be support issues, getting together with a lawyer before somebody files in court to enforce their rights, I think that's very wise. It's prophylactic and it puts you in the position of what I think is a position of power. And I think that's very important. Knowledge is power. And it's very important to know what's coming down the road for you. So divorce planning or custody planning or support planning, very, very important.
Now let's look ahead. How far ahead of a wedding should someone see a lawyer about what could loom on the future?
That's a great question because it isn't uncommon for people to call us. I'm laughing because I had a call last week. I told Lisa, gentleman called me last week. He was in Las Vegas to get married that day and was calling to inquire about a premarital agreement. Now, it's impossible for us to put together a premarital agreement at 11 o'clock in the morning, we were getting married at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And to answer your question more specifically, I think several months beforehand. Number one, intellectually, you don't want to be in the position of the week of the wedding when it's all happiness and flower arrangements and what time is the band coming and the family's coming in 2 days ahead of time and everybody loves each other. We don't want to be negotiating a prenuptial agreement amidst all of that love and happiness. Because, listen, prenuptial agreements aren't fun. They're not fun to put together. They're not fun to negotiate. They're very necessary. But you want to have that done, put in the drawer, put in the safe deposit box, out of your mind several weeks before the wedding. So most of us know several months ahead of time, even more than that, that we're getting married in the future. People have lists of things they're going to do for a wedding. Reserve the hall. Order the flowers. Order the caterer. High on that list should be finish the prenuptial. And it should be way before all the things that have to be done for a wedding in the last couple of months.
What are the dangers of not having a prenuptial?
Well, the law in Pennsylvania is that whatever assets and the value of your assets that you bring in, whatever you bring into the marriage, is separate property. So you don't need a prenuptial for that. But those assets are going to grow in value during the marriage. So if I bring in, for example, a 401k, and that 401k has $100,000 in it, and I stay married for 20 years, that $100,000 may grow to $200,000. Do I want that increase in value of my 401k to be a marital asset or a premarital asset? The same goes true for the house I've brought into the marriage. The same goes through for the whatever asset, my business. So premarital agreements are critical to determine how the value of premarital assets are to be treated. Also, how are we going to treat income during the marriage? Is income going to be separate or is income going to be a joint asset? That's another item that we deal with in premarital assets. What about if a divorce does occur? Do you want to negotiate premaritally how assets are to be divided by percentage? Do you want to talk about whether or not a party would be entitled to spousal support? Do you want to talk about whether a party would be entitled to alimony? All these issues can be resolved by a premarital agreement. We also have postmarital agreements in Pennsylvania. And postmarital agreements, whereas premarital agreements are signed before a marriage, postmarital agreements are signed after a marriage. And the purpose of those agreements are to talk, also to talk about how certain assets and liabilities of the parties are to be dealt with. Certainly, and without question, it's much easier and more advantageous to have to do a premarital agreement rather than a postmarital agreement. But they can be done after the marriage also.
Do both parties need their own lawyer?
For a premarital agreement?
Yes.
You don't need your own lawyer in Pennsylvania. The law is very clear that whether or not a party has a lawyer is not determinative of the value or the enforceability of a premarital agreement. However, I think it would be imprudent, it would not be smart, for a party who's been presented with a premarital agreement to not see a lawyer and have that document reviewed. I can tell you that in 35 years, there has not been a premarital agreement that has been drafted by another lawyer that's been presented to me that has ever met the needs of my client 100%. And many times it's written in our language, in legalese. And it's written that way so that we understand it and so that judges understand it. But it's not written so that laymen understand it. So whereas a lawyer is not required, a lawyer is very important.
Well, you've been doing this for 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
Give us some examples of cases, situations. Perhaps you can give us a common situation and maybe something is simply interesting because it was uncommon.
Mm-hmm. I think many of the common situations involve situations where a party owns a business, for example, and the other spouse is not going to be involved in the business. The other spouse may be a teacher. The other spouse may be a lawyer. I mean, they're just not going to be involved in that party's retail fish supply business. And the party that owns the business, since that party is going to continue running the business, managing the business, working the business, doesn't want to share the value of that business with the other side. Or you have a situation where you've got a family business and the family wants to be sure that the family business remains in the family because there may be more than one owner than just the family member. The family member's brother may be a partner and they're not looking to be a partner with their brother's spouse one day. So prenuptial agreements can be served to protect those types of situations.
I want to thank our listeners for listening today to the Ask the Expert show. Our guest today has been Mr. Lee Schwartz of the Schwartz Jordan Law Group here in Philadelphia at 1801 Market Street. Mr. Schwartz has 35 years of experience, and I have to tell you, has answered the questions, I think, pretty good. So thank you again for listening.
Thank you very much.
The Schwartz Jordan Law Group's philosophy in family law is simple: to provide you with the legal advice and support you need in order to make sound, educated decisions that prepare you for your future. They can help you with all types of family law issues, including the complete divorce process. Much of their practice involves contested or uncontested divorce matters, such as alimony and division of property, including retirement assets, stock options, and business interests. Schwartz Jordan have a great deal of experience assisting clients in family law issues involving children, paternity actions, child custody, and child support. They also represent clients outside of the divorce process, drafting prenuptial agreements and postnuptial agreements, and assisting with the modification of domestic orders and child support enforcement. For more information or to discuss your divorce or family law case, call Schwartz Jordan Law today at 215-967-9070. That's 215-967-9070, or go to their website, schwartzjordan.com.
Ask me about relocation.
One thing we haven't gone over is relocation. Explain that to me.
Relocation involves a situation where a parent wants to move or relocate to another area away from Philadelphia. There's a common misconception in our area that a parent, especially a custodial parent, meaning a parent that has physical custody of a child, can move wherever they want to move. And that's not true. There is a relocation statute in Pennsylvania which provides that a party, before they leave the area, has to provide a certain specific written notification through the court that they intend on leaving the area with the child. They have to give the location where they're going, a specific address, a time that they're leaving, what school district the child will be or the children will be in. It's a very specific written notification with specific language. And you have to include with that notice that's filed with the court, you have to include a counter affidavit, which is a document the other side needs to sign to let the court know whether they object or they don't object to the party moving. If they file an objection, then the case will be listed before a judge, and you'll have to go through a full trial with a judge in court of whether or not the party is permitted to relocate. So it isn't automatic. It isn't something that's guaranteed. And it's a very complicated process. If a party just does up and leave, just decides they're going to go and move to another area of the country, the other parent has the right, has the opportunity to come into court, obtain a court order, and go to wherever the child is located and get the child back. Now, depending, when I say get the child back, I mean bring the child back to Pennsylvania. Depending on where the child is located, that will determine what the process is to get the child back in that jurisdiction. So if the child is taken to Arizona, for example, and I just went through a case where I have a client who where the mother left and took the children to Arizona, my client got an order from the court in Philadelphia to bring the children back and went to Arizona, had to file a custody action in Arizona, but within short order, within a week, got an order from the Arizona court and brought the children back to Philadelphia. So if you want to relocate, I suggest you speak to a competent family lawyer first.
So there are different laws for different states
there
affecting
are.
All of this.
Yes.
I do want to thank Mr. Schwartz of the Schwartz Jordan Law Firm for being with us today on Welcome to the Ask the Experts show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much.
The Schwartz Jordan Law Group's philosophy in family law is simple: to provide you with the legal advice and support you need in order to make sound, educated decisions that prepare you for your future. They can help you with all types of family law issues, including the complete divorce process. Much of their practice involves contested or uncontested divorce matters, such as alimony and division of property, including retirement assets, stock options, and business interests. Schwartz Jordan have a great deal of experience assisting clients in family law issues involving children, paternity actions, child custody, and child support. They also represent clients outside of the divorce process, drafting prenuptial agreements and postnuptial agreements, and assisting with the modification of domestic orders and child support enforcement. For more information or to discuss your divorce or family law case, call Schwartz Jordan Law today at 215-967-9070. That's 215-967-9070, or go to their website, schwartzjordan.com.